Good morning, Australia. Good afternoon, America. You're listening to Radio Tony and a Conversation with Kez. I'm your host, Tony Lantis, and my gorgeous co-host is Kez Wickham St. George.
Good morning, all.
How are you?
Sorry, Tony, you broke up then.
Oh, yay. So this is going to be the way that the show is going to go today.
Oh, well, that's Australia.
A casual conversation about what's been going on in our world. We have a guest lined up today, but she has not appeared online as yet. So Kez and I are going to have a little bit of a chat. Now, coming on to this show today, I was messaging Kez last night going, we've lost internet. I can't get it back on. And as you'll know, internet is a key component of delivering live shows. So I've been up early this morning doing all the technical things that I need to do to try and get the internet back on, and it's still not on. So I'm using my backup internet service, which I share with my husband who does international work. And so that's a little bit challenging. So listeners, if you're watching today and I cut out, Kez will keep talking and you'll still see Kez, but you may not see me, and that's okay. You'll still hear my voice, hopefully. So we have been talking pre-show, Kez and I, about the weather events in Australia. So as you, as listeners might know, we've had, where I live on the eastern side of Australia, we've had phenomenal rainfall. So I think in the last month or so, we've had almost a metre of rain. What that means is that the ground is incredibly soggy and our creeks rise and we suffer with flooding and all that sort of stuff. So we've gotten through that. And I was talking to Kez last night, and I'm going to let Kez tell you about what's happening on the west coast of Australia. So we're on opposite coasts, completely a whole country away. So that's like Los Angeles and Florida and a bit further. That's how far away Kez and I are. But I'm going to let Kez tell you what's happening in her neck of the woods this morning, because it's pretty interesting.
Bit scary, Tony.
Yes.
I don't know if our listeners, well, I guess they do, because they're used to tornadoes and hurricanes, but I'm not. Coming from New Zealand, we don't have tornadoes or hurricanes. Even a tsunami is maybe 4 foot high. So we all go down to the beach and have a good swim and what we call a high tide, and that's about it. We don't see, you know, but we get earthquakes. We get lots of earthquakes. Yeah. So today in Australia, I was told last night that we have two tornadoes. Now, I've slowly watched them coming down from the coast. I feel like I'm doing a weather report here for the rest of Perth.
Fabulous job, Kez. Fabulous.
So it's, yeah, it's pretty dangerous where it is hit. We were watching TV and all of a sudden everything outside went so quiet. It was scary. And it was pouring with rain, and all of a sudden nothing. The rain stopped. There wasn't a sound. There wasn't. We normally get lots of frogs, ground beetles, crickets, what we call grass beetles. They make a sound, a bit higher sound than a cricket. There was no, we get a lot of night bird life. So there was no owls, there was nothing. And all of a sudden my husband opened the front door and he said, listen, and all I could hear was nothing. Now my ears were ringing because I was so used to the TV going, being on the internet, being busy like we both are, and all of a sudden it was the weirdest. It was a feeling that I was really, all my hairs went up on end, and I thought, earthquake. Oh. Yeah, that's what I thought. And so we live in Australia. It's not going to happen. Well, it does happen, but we don't know about it. So especially over here in Perth. So I guess further up from us, Geraldton had big warning signs up last night. So on the TV, big red flashes, you know, leave your home, head for safety, or make sure you're safe, which means there'll be flooding on its way, which you're used to. But yes. Not only that, I have sat through about 5 years ago, I was living in a caravan, a huge caravan, a caravan park, and I'd never experienced a tornado before. And it was like living inside a tin whistle. Everything screamed. The whole caravan shook. And I thought, oh, well, I'm going to be Dorothy. I'm going to end up somewhere. So there's nothing you can do about it. You just have to let it go. You know, there's absolutely nothing. The park caretaker knocked on my door and said, are you all right? Well, what can you say? Well, I'm having a cup of tea. I guess I am. I was a bit scared.
Yeah.
My husband was working up in the mines. Yeah, so I was on my own, my first experience, and there was many after that, and you just buckle down. You just buckle down. Yeah. You know it's going to be wet, it's going to be muddy, it's going to be extremely windy. But because I live Rockingham sort of right on the coast,
yes,
beautiful place, right on the coast, but there seem to be pockets where the wind doesn't hit you as much.
So
where I was in the caravan park, yeah, the wind was screaming. But here, there's no sound at all. There's just nothing. It's so eerily quiet. Now it's nearly 7:15. I haven't heard a bird sing yet. And normally the place is alive with birds.
When we were having this conversation before, that often nature knows what is happening or what's going to happening before humans pick up on it. I know too, when we're going into that flood, everything gets pretty quiet and all you hear is the rushing noise of the flood water. Afterwards they get pretty vocal, but beforehand they go really quiet. I've heard lots of people talk about, because I'm a Queenslander, so cyclones are kind of part and parcel of what we grow up with, and you get used to the warnings throughout summer.
Yep.
And often the preparations, not so much now that we're quite close to the southern end of the Gold Coast, but up north it's kind of summer is a cyclone prep, so there's different things that you do. But at the end of the day, we're pretty much at the mercy of Mother Nature, and there seems to be quite a lot of extreme events. I know north of us that the countries in Indonesia and East Timor, the islands, have all had monumental amounts of rain this year, and I had the thought, Kez, that with everything shut down last year, and it's been a long time since we've had what Australia would call a monsoon season, where you get low system after low system after low system right across the top of Australia. And it does seem very much like there's been just this constant revolving flow of low systems across the top of Australia. And the thought occurred to me that with all of us shut down last year, I wonder if that was like a reset for Mother Nature, because, you know, there's been some earthquakes in New Zealand as well. We've had lots of rain. You guys have had the tornadoes and some cyclones and all the rest of it. And it'll be interesting to see how the climate plays out in the next few years after that kind of shutdown in 2019.
Over here in Perth, we have had, I've been here 20 years. When we came here, the heat was so dry and it was beautiful.
Yes.
And I was really, really grateful because we get such high humidity in New Zealand. It's huge. Yes. So by 2:00 in the afternoon on a hot day in New Zealand, I'd be just absolutely slathered. You know, there's nowhere to go. I mean, very few people I knew had aircon. This is 20 years ago.
Really? Yeah.
It's expensive. Aircon's expensive. Yeah, yes. And New Zealand's an expensive place to live. So when we came over here, it was like, get the aircon, but there was no need for it. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
And the weather was dry. And I mean, it was like, this is fantastic. I could live here forever. This year has been the hottest, most humid, dripping wet year I've ever had in Perth. I think the air con's been turned off once. Now, we haven't had any rain since September.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So when you were being flooded out, I kept thinking, I'll bring some over here. So I think we've had a couple of nights. We've had a couple of days of like, here it's like very much like when I lived in Cloncurry by Mount Isa.
Yes.
It was very much like heavy, 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 throw all the stuff at you, then half an hour later it's gone. And so that's what we've had here. It's becoming more and more like Northern Queensland to me. That's to me. It, the heat, the sudden storming, and it goes. And this, and when it rains like that, of course, the, it doesn't do the earth any good. It hits and slides off. It doesn't sink in.
I was just going to say, because it's heavy, fast rain, it seems to run off quicker than it can soak into the ground at the moment. But, yes, I agree, Kez. I really struggle with humidity. And this year the humidity and the heat have been particularly nasty. Getting better now. So today, for the first time in months and months and months, there's been that lovely cold or cool air and coolness overnight. So that's good. So, we digress and talk about the weather, hoping that our wonderful guest will arrive, and she hasn't, so that's okay. Kez and I really wanted to talk to you guys today about what the purpose of the show is, and that is that we want to talk to authors of all different genres with an aim to give them the platform that they can come on and be interviewed by us and talk about their book. Now, our author today was from Montana, and she's written a range of books about the paranormal and the magic that surrounds her. And in her absence, we're not going to talk about her, but Kez and I would dearly like to talk about some of our own writing. So, Kez, I'd love for you to talk to the listeners about your book, and then I want to talk to the audience about what you do now, because it's pretty cool. So let's talk about your writing journey and the books that you've written about and where people can find them, because they're great books, people.
My books are to be found firstly at my publisher, MMH Press. And excuse me. I wrote a I had a bestseller last year called Metal Mermaid. Now, people say to me, what's that name mean? Now, when it was put onto Amazon as an ebook, it went into hardcore metal music, and nobody knew what the name meant. So the name Metal Mermaid means it was all about my little caravan on my very first trip around Australia. We were at a place which is only 4 hours from us called Albany, and that was as far, because I was one of these people that thought, I'm just a household goddess. I don't want to go, you know, I don't want to go in a poor little caravan and tour poor little camping grounds and, you know, and actually clean my dishes in a community kitchen. No, that wasn't for me until I got on the road and discovered what fun it was and the people I met. So Metal Mermaid started off with my caravan being in a huge storm, and the caretaker, and this is a true story, the caretaker coming and saying to us with his tractor, which we call Fergie's here, with his Fergie, his tractor, and he pulled our caravan into under some trees.
Oh, yes.
We said, don't go under a tree when you're in a tornado. We were just like, oh, yeah, we're safe, we're fine. So we didn't. We actually had no compunction about going under the trees. We didn't know. First time caravanners. But we're in a bit of a gully, and it rained. The water came up, and we couldn't get the caravan out because it was up to the doorstep. Now, we also didn't have a toilet and a bathroom in the caravan. We had one of these old ones. Yes. And I had, for emergencies, I had a little blue bucket for emergencies only at nighttime. Yes. And, the little blue bucket was floating around in the puddle outside. It was like, what have we done? And I hated every minute of it. I didn't like it at all. It was like, I'm never coming back to this situation. My ego was sadly dented. So was my pride. Everything about me said, this is not you. So I managed to take a step down into calf deep water and try and get to the bathroom. And long story, I fell over. My husband was in hysterics.
Oh,
and
no.
The park man, and once I got changed and had breakfast and actually taken a big breath because I was really scared. Yes. I thought, we're never going to get out of here. The park manager pulled us out with a Fergie, and we got on the road. But it was, she was my mermaid. She saved us. We were very safe inside. Heard nothing leaked. It was just great. So I called her Metal Mermaid, and that name stuck with the book, Metal Mermaid. And so wherever I've been, and we've got four caravans since then, and so it's been like, okay, let's better it and better it and better it until we've got what we want. And everything inside the caravan is what we want. And then I started writing. After that was published, I wrote The Cuppa Tree. Again, a true story. The cup, wherever you go in Australia, someone tries, especially if it's a small town, you'll find that the community will try and gain tourists by doing something weird or strange to their fences. I don't know what this is. But as I've travelled Australia, and I've been around twice now, I've seen shoe trees, I've seen bra fences, I've seen knicker fences. Close to Perth, we have Tin Horse Alley, where everybody makes the most beautiful art out of old tin, and they make horses out of them.
Oh.
And so you get horses dancing, you get horses riding, you get horses, you get everything that a human would do. They put a horse there instead out of old metal. So it's really fun to do these rides and see all the stuff. But the last book I wrote was called The Cuppa Tree, and it was to do with the birth of my grandson. But in the book I put granddaughter just to change it round a bit. So the idea is that the stories I get from wherever I camp, once you light that campfire, Tony, not only do you get bush moths, but you get people. And people are like bush moths. They come to the light.
Yes.
You know, so I've been sitting there with my husband discussing, I don't know, the weather.
Whatever.
And we'll hear people coming towards us. And it's been someone that's camped way over. You can't even see them. You know, when you pull off into what they call laybys, we have lots of laybys on the main roads here in Australia. Mm. And they're magic to go and camp in because they're free. You get your fire pit. You've got everything in your caravan that you need, but you see, if there's a big group of people, there's all sorts. There's tents, there's caravans, there's trucks with houses on the back. There's everything there, and it's a real community. And some of them follow. That's where they live. They live on the Nullarbor in the desert, and that's where they live. They don't like the cities. They don't like the townships. They don't like the little country places. They like quiet. And they live all over the place. I have never seen such a community of aged people in my life. Now, we think they go into old folks' homes. They don't.
They go traveling, and they live in their caravan. I have close friends who are nomads. They don't have a home of their own. They just have a caravan, and they just drive wherever, pull up and stop where somewhere that they like for a number of months, and it seems to be really popular, Kez. So did you find that there were lots of retired people that live this lifestyle permanently?
Not only retired people, I found, and it's a bit of a sad story, but a lot of young families that can't afford a mortgage, the kids are homeschooled. Wonderful, they're wonderful families. They're clean, they're healthy, they're well dressed, they're well spoken. There's nothing wrong. I mean, it's like when you pull into one of these little communities, it's like its own private little village. You almost have to fit in, almost. You just can't pull up. You can. We just do. I think the longest we've stayed is about 3 or 4 nights with a community in the bush. Very interesting. I would not want to live that lifestyle, but I admire them that do, because finances have stopped them from taking that step into a mortgage, or they've been lost their home, especially during COVID. Yes. There were so many people on the road stuck. They couldn't go anywhere because the borders were up.
Because of the borders.
So, so there was, you found that the community was sending out trucks of food to these people stuck. Now the Nullarbor is a huge long road. So, you know, you've got your south border and you've got north border. So people were sending out because they couldn't get to anything. There is one shop between the border, but it's like paying an arm and a leg. Yes. So people were sending out food parcels and that to these families. But where do you find them? That was the trick. Where do you find these families? Yeah. They live off the land. They just live off the land.
Yeah.
And I just find that I've never seen anything like it in my life. I really appreciate them when they come up to our fire or come up to our door. We're sitting outside. I mean, summertime you can't have a fire, but, you know, we're sitting outside enjoying the beautiful views and the sunsets and the sunrises here are just to die for. Yes. So you get out there early, you listen to the birds at nighttime. I often lie in my caravan. I think there's it's an emu or a kangaroo going past. Yes. And you think it's a giant outside because, you know, you can hear the noise of them going past. It's an exciting, exciting lifestyle. But it's not for me to live. Sorry.
Americans might not realize that our normal kangaroos, they're big. Like huge. They can be like 6 foot, and the sound of that big tail thumping on the ground is pretty unmistakable, isn't it, Kez?
I think, yeah, it is. We have greys. I think, look, I'm not an Australian. I'm a New Zealander. So I don't get the things right sometimes, but I think we have greys over here and I think we have reds over your way. Big, but I have seen, you know, touring and travelling. You know, you pull into a park somewhere where there's a space to pull over. Once they look minute, they look big. Well, more or less like a little caravan when you pull up and you see a kangaroo, and then they stand up and you think, oh, God, he's huge. Yeah. They're seven foot tall. They're enormous.
Yeah.
And the muscles on a male, the muscles are huge.
Aren't they?
Huge.
And they're scary when they fight those boys. When we were growing up, we had the property that we lived on had big planes, and I actually still remember back when I was quite small that we had herds of emus and the kangaroos, but the kangaroos, the boys in particular, my parents were quite protective of us because they'd seen the cattle dogs or the working dogs be seriously harmed by the male kangaroos protecting their herd or their group of other kangaroos. Mm. But yes, have those big chest muscles and those big back legs, and the tails on kangaroos are phenomenally strong. So they can actually stand up on that tail and kick with those back legs. They're phenomenal animals, quite amazing. Kez, the idea of storytelling around a campfire is probably something that is deeply ingrained in our genetics. Do you think that whole light of a campfire and there's an aura almost, or a calmness that allows people to tell their stories? Did you find that when you were travelling across Australia?
I think they find safety within the campfire. You know, campfire, even from the caveman days, when you go back to it, people had fire. I mean, if you're in a dark room and someone turns on a light, you suddenly have this flooding of safety. And it's genetic, it's DNA. So when they see a campfire, they think, oh, we'll go over and talk to them. And they might, I don't know if they're scoping us out or not. I don't know if they've walked around the camp. I can't hear them. So we get lots of people that will come in and have a mug of tea with us and they're gone, just gone. And they say, well, thank you for the tea. We normally have damper with treacle on it. And it's like, why did they come here? Well, they came here to say hello and find out who you are, because they might have gone back to their community, which is in the bush somewhere. We don't know. But we always make people welcome. I'll tell you a little experience. I was on a steam train going through the bush here in a place called Pinjarra, and they have a dinner train. Yes. and I was standing on the platform, and it had stopped to rewater, standing on the platform talking to my grandson, who was there for the dinner as well. And there was a light bobbing in the trees, and my son said to me, "It's a ghost." I said, "Don't be silly." But it really made me go, you know, I was really like thinking, "Oh, my goodness." So finally he appeared. The man appeared. Now, he was in a long, dark coat with a cowl and an old lantern on his stick. He looked 200 years old. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And he just appeared. Yeah, he just appeared out of the bush, and he said, "Hello, you two." And we went, "Hello." And then he said, "Having a good night?" And I went, "Very, very good, thank you." And, yeah, he was like, I sort of stepped back and pulled my grandson with me, because my grandson suffers with a little bit of excitement. He was ready to jump over and shake the guy's hand. Yes. And I just said, no, let's just back off a little bit. But where did he come from, and what was he doing out there?
Yeah.
And we didn't have time.
So there must be lots of stories that come from those campfires.
Yes, yeah.
From people across the country.
Yes.
Lots of stories.
Hundreds and hundreds of stories. Yeah.
And when you're
a writer, of course your imagination takes over, and you can make all sorts of stories up. I try and keep to the base of the truth as possible. But I mean, sometimes, like that gentleman that walked out of the bush while we were on the train, he was really scary.
Yeah.
And I didn't know his story, but I certainly wrote about him and gave him the story.
Yeah. As a writer, I'm guessing that the traveling gives you creative inspiration. It works that way for you, doesn't it, Kez?
It does, but you also meet some amazing people on the road. I mean, you know, who did last time we went to Geraldton? We did a big camping expedition up there. Geraldton, it's only 4 hours from us, and worst camping trip ever, I might add. So much happened.
Kez sent me a message after that camping trip and said, "Oh my God, I'm so glad I'm home," and then proceeded to tell me everything that happened. I'm like, "Oh no."
Kez,
about your trip from hell.
It was a trip from hell. Well, worst things have happened. Let's face it. To the normal person, they would think, "Phew, that's a bit silly." But you know, every time I turned around, there was either an accident happening, and it was only little, but it would mean something, like we'd have to stop and fix it.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, I camped in a space. I wasn't feeling very well, and I said to my husband, "Can we pull over?" It was a 45-degree day here, it was pouring off me. So I just said to my husband, "I'm not feeling well. Can we find a wee quiet camp space?" So we found one. Bidengarra, it's called.
Yeah.
Don't ask me what it means. And we pulled round to the back of a service station where they had two little parks for caravans, and they were service, which means they had power, and we have our own water and power if we need it. Mm. Pulled over, said to my husband, "I'm just going to take a painkiller and lie down. I was really feeling really yuck.
Really horrible.
Migraine, all the works." And I was feeling a lot better, and all of a sudden I heard the most godforsaken scream. I thought someone was stabbing my husband. That's the screaming that was going on. And then all of a sudden it stopped, and I heard honk. I thought, what the hell? And I went outside, and my husband's sitting in his deck chair in hysterics. He said, "You should see your face." I said, "Why?" I said, "What was that?" "No," he said, "It's a peacock." I said, "You're joking." It was right outside out my window in the bedroom. It was right out, and it had come up, and it was talking. It was talking to my husband, like, "What are you doing here? This is my space." And, of course, Lou just sat there and let it do its own thing. But I had no idea. I've never heard anything like it in my life. But there are wild peacocks here. Now, why? This is Australia. It's such an amazing place.
Yeah.
To me, peacocks belong in India. So what's it doing out in Australia? But they're wild. And there was an albino one there as well. Beautiful.
Oh.
Yeah, beautiful. Yeah. So the females lined up on the fence. They flew up onto the fence, and they were quite quiet. It was the three males strutting their stuff and showing off their beautiful plumage. Yes. And they're not quiet. They are really noisy. But see, that's story time for me.
Yes, yes, yes. And they woke you up and you've felt better, obviously, after a sleep. But what a noise to wake up to.
Oh, it was scary. My heart was pumping because it sounded like someone was murdering someone. That's what it sounded like. Someone was having an awful fight outside. But it was this scream. High-pitched scream. It's really unnerving. It makes your whole, all your hair stand up.
Yeah,
I got up pretty quickly, I'll tell you that
much. Yeah, yeah.
I got up pretty quickly and checked outside to make sure my husband was okay. And he's just sitting there grinning, and he said, that's what's making the noise. But there was a scream, 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 and then this quiet, and then this honk. I thought, how strange. But apparently it's the way that's what they do. But you see movies that these wonderful peacocks, and they're making this noise, and you think, well, it's a peacock noise, but never 5 inches from your ear, which is between the wall, never. So it was pretty deafening. Yeah. See, that's my story. I can make a story out of that so easy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so, in your travels across Australia, we have a bit of a history of terrible things happening to travellers. Have you ever come, besides the man that you just described, have there ever been other instances where you felt a little unsafe whilst you travel, or do you generally feel pretty safe most of the time?
Most of the time I feel safe, but you hear horror stories all the time.
Yes.
You hear terrible things when you're on the road. Some friends of ours were travelling on the main road, had hitched up the caravan, were on the main road travelling, looked back and their caravan's on fire. Yeah. You know, so what caused it, we don't know. It just burned. Yeah. All that was left was a steel frame. Everything, her wedding ring, her phone, all her books, memories, photographs, all gone. But why?
No.
Why?
Yeah.
And when I talked to her 2 weeks later, she was still shaking. You know, things like that. There are things. There was no one. They were in the middle of the walks on the main road.
Yeah.
So in many places, especially in the last book, I wrote about a place that I broke down, or our Jeep caught on fire. So we pulled into a lay-by, and there was, my husband put the fire out, but our motor was gone. We couldn't go anywhere. I won't go into the story because it'll ruin the book for anyone that wants to read it. But once I got to a safe place, I was badly injured myself, not burnt, but I'd had to jump onto a big moving truck and jump off a moving truck because they won't stop. The poor driver, he knew I was in agony when I jumped up to get into the cab. We're still traveling, but he was, I never thought to jump up to a truck that was only going maybe 10 kilometers an hour was so hard in my whole life. My little legs were scrabbling away. It was like someone stop. When I jumped off, it couldn't stop because they can't stop.
Yes.
And you have to, they're road trains. They're 4 or 5trailers long. They're, huge. 3 trailers long. They're massive. So I'm way out in the wop-wops and find a roadhouse. He drops me off. I go into the roadhouse. The first thing the publican, the wife, says to me is, you need a beer. And I found that with every pub I ever go to, you need a beer. Guess what? I'm a non-drinker. So I opted for a black tea. And then the horror stories came out. Now, my husband was still out there. And I was terrified for him, absolutely terrified that there are people running around that will seriously hurt you, if not kill you. Now, if it was a pub story, I don't know. But I heard three of them.
You hear them in mainstream from time to time. You hear the stories. And I thought that's why I'd ask and see what you'd heard. Because folklore is an amazing thing. And you often wonder when they have stories about, backpackers disappearing or young people disappearing or women just completely disappearing off the face of the planet. that's what gets my creative brain thinking, I wonder what that story is. I wonder what happened. I wonder what's lurking out there that can get away with a crime without, because Australia is such a big, diverse country with wide open spaces, lots of places to hide.
Well, if what the publican was saying was true, there is a particular, still very, very wild tribe out there, Aboriginal tribe they're talking about.
Yes.
Whether it's true or not, I don't know. But, yeah, be aware of them, he said. They will have you. And I thought, what do you mean?
Oh, no.
He said they will take all your possessions and they will make sure that you're hurt. They will burn everything. So, yeah. That I had to wait for my husband till 5 the next morning till they went and picked him up, brought him home, and I was just praying nonstop that he was okay.
Yes.
He was. Everything was fine. We had the caravan towed in and we had to fix the Jeep up and all the rest of it. But just that one, well, it wasn't just one story. It was many, many stories I'd heard that night.
Yes.
Sitting in the pub and, of course, pub in the outback.
Yeah.
Where do these people come from? I walked into two people, and when I went back and I got a room overnight because I knew that's where we'd have to stay.
Yeah.
Went back into for dinner at 7 o'clock. And there was 30 people in the bar, but the road we traveled down, it was just dirt. It was just weird. There was nobody.
Yeah.
Where do they come from? That's what I'd like to know. Is this a mirage I'm in? Am I dreaming all this? There was nobody here. And all of a sudden, there's 30 farmers and their wives having a beer. Yeah. And I just, where do you come from? And that's, and just what you said about people disappearing and that. I don't, my first instinct is, what was their last thought? That's my, what were they thinking? You know, and that's how I write. I go into the person's head and I think, so this was scary for you. How would it be for me if I was in that situation? You know, so that's when I start writing and the creative just takes over.
My muse
arrives and I just write.
Yes. And you, Kev, you talk about getting into that creative flow where you're just writing, the words just come into your mind and you just keep writing.
Yeah.
That creative flow starts to happen, which many people search for but sometimes don't get if they're wanting to write. But I haven't had that position where I can't write. There's always something to write about. For me, it's about not having enough time to sit and write. But for you, you've got that time now to just sit and create magic and words from around the stories that you've heard. Kev, I just wanted to tell the audience something else that you're really passionate about is helping people bring their books to life. Can you talk to the audience about what you do in terms of your book coaching?
My consultancy, well, yes. I have found a lot of people that say, I don't write, I can't write. Well, I call that rubbish.
Yeah.
Because we have to use our voice. Now, I'm a creative writer, which doesn't mean to say that I'm going to ask you to grab a pen and start writing a ghost story or any other story. All I'm asking is that you get your words onto paper. There's a lot of my generation, my past generation, like my parents, I knew little bits. That's all I ever knew. I didn't know the whole story, yet they both fought in World War II in different ways. I knew that my mother lived in a tent on a beach somewhere. But why did you live? Well, that story was never told because they were told to be quiet.
Yes.
So when I was a child, the rule in my house was children were meant to be seen and not heard.
Yeah.
So I was always shoved under the table. That's where I had like a little, had crayons and a book, cushions and biscuits. Yeah. And now and again, I get a glass of water, a glass of milk. But my mother and father were great at entertaining. But because I was the baby of the family, so I learned to listen to the stories. I knew exactly whose shoes were whose. And their voices. I learned to listen. And that's such an asset
when you learn to listen.
And you hear the nuance in the voice. When you hear the voice breaking, you know it's sad. when you hear the voice starting to waver, you know, there's a laugh coming. So you learn to tell the nuance. And so that's what I ask other people is, when you, it doesn't have to be your story. I would prefer, if you feel that you're a non-writer, then relate it to me. I can actually scribe for you, but I'm not asked to do so. So when you tell your, everyone's got a story, Tony. It's just getting that story onto paper and letting, it's, I just feel it's a shame not to put your voice out there. And if writing's your voice, then so be it. I mean, we're lucky that we have radio and TV these days, but who knows when that day.
There'll always be writers, authors and books, electronic books, audio books, whatever it is. There will always
be. If there was a Holocaust, it would be gone.
Yeah.
If there was a Holocaust, TV and radio would be gone.
That's right.
It would be back to Morse code again, I guess. Yeah. My mother-in-law was a Morse code for the for England.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so she wrote shorthand. Now, I knew what shorthand was, and she never stopped till the day she, well, she died with of dementia, but up until the day that she got too sick. She wrote everything in shorthand, and she fascinated me.
Oh, shorthand's fascinating. Shorthand's fascinating.
Knitting and recipes and stuff like that. Now, she left. She didn't leave anything. I knew very little about her. They wouldn't talk about it. So I want to know. You know, and I used to be so nosy and annoy people, especially in my younger days. Tell me your story. But, yeah, it's it's just – please, please, whoever's listening, be brave enough to write your words down and leave them for someone. You know, if I might be, I'm a stranger to you listening, for those listening to me in the USA and wherever, but leave your story for someone that can either scribe it for you or I don't care how you leave it behind, but leave it behind. It's so important that we leave history and our story, because our story also includes how we coped.
Yes, and it's unique to each person, isn't it?
Yes, each men and women were brought up so differently when I was a kid. So women were, they took pride, absolute pride in being a housewife, absolute pride. I'm a housewife, I'm a mother. The pride there was amazing. And when we sort of felt really, really sorry for people that didn't have that title of housewife and mother. It was like, you're a bit of a failure then. Yeah, that's how we felt.
And it's I was a child. It's swapped, hasn't it?
Yes.
Completely gone the other way.
Yeah. So I like to hear from particularly women that have had a hard time and survived.
Yes.
That's what I like, because the survivor mode is built into us. It's like a little siren that's just going there all the time. I mean, if you saw me 40 years ago, you wouldn't have recognized my story and say, and the story is you. So let's all get together and tell the story and be wise about it. Leave the wisdoms, and that's what I like to call them, the wisdoms behind, so that your future can look back and think, well, look, Auntie down the road, she combated whatever with whatever, let's give it a go. Or she grew to be who she is now. Why can't we be that?
Yeah.
Because your wisdoms are like a ladder that lead people upwards.
That's right. That's right. Yes. And if you don't actually tell the world or leave a record of that wisdom, it's lost and someone else has to learn it or write it, or, you know, the wisdom of each unique human being is important. And it comes back to that whole storytelling and the gathering around the campfire. Yep. That's the way our ancestors passed on their wisdom, was around a campfire or similar, in telling stories about life that helped others to cope with whatever they're going through. And that's right. In the next decade or so, Kez, we could have all sorts of challenges that come up for us. We've seen COVID, and by all accounts, this will not be the last pandemic that we are confronted with. There's climate change, there's political unrest, there's war, there's peace, there's election. There's lots and lots yet to transpire across humanity. And if we write down the things that we learnt about getting through, particularly last year, how did we cope? What did we do? How do we get through? We build resilience in the next generations. Exactly. Don't we, Kez? If we write about how we coped, then we give them the tools to cope in the future. So what Kez does now is help people who have either written or want to write. She coaches them and teaches them and consults with them to get their book down, whether that's on paper, whether that as an audiobook, whatever it is, that's part of what Kez does now. Not only is she a writer herself with her best-selling books, but now she helps others, other authors, to get their stories down. There's an endless need from humanity to hear other people's stories. Humans are connected by stories. And by doing what Kez does, she wants to help the generations to come pass their stories on to everyone else. And it doesn't have to be factual. It can be fiction. It can be all the different genres. Hey, Kez, what do you think?
It's the same as you.
Yeah.
It's the same as you, Tony. This is why you do a radio show, because people can use their voice. Right. Mine is in script and scribing, and I've joined you in this particular force that you use. But you, this is what you do. I mean, I've read your book. It was a very personal, it's your personal story. But
it is.
When you write, it doesn't always have to be personal. It can be completely creative. It all depends what you want to do. You've encouraged that on radio, Tony, for people to leave their voices behind. Yeah. Mm. So. The thing is, you're doing exactly what I do, but in a different genre. That's all it is.
Yeah. And the purpose of Kez and I getting together in this show, again, is that we want to spread the knowledge and understanding of what it is to write and to listen to other authors' journeys, because authors all have different journeys. They have different, you know, we have authors that write poetry. We have authors that write screenplays. We have authors that write novels, novellas, blogs, et cetera, et cetera. It's all a method of storytelling, and it's important. It's important that we don't lose the skills in story writing. It's important for the generations that come after us. Our stories will be important down the track. And they won't. You don't want them to be lost and gone forever. We really need a generation of people to keep writing, to aspire to write, and to aspire to publish books. In the not too distant future, Kez and I and a number of other people are going to be working on a program by which authors are taken on a journey themselves, so that they learn how to get their words out, get them down on paper, and go on to publish a book or two or three. And so that's what Kez and I are currently working on at the moment. But in the background of that, Kez does offer coaching and help with getting your story out. And if you want to connect with Kez, Leo's listening in the background, so he can obviously pop Kez's details up in the chat box, but it's just kezwickhamstgeorge.com.au. And Kez, your books are on Amazon as well?
They are. Yes, they are. But, you know, most of my books are through my publisher, so it's so much easier. I mean, if you want to buy an ebook, go to Amazon. But, yeah, it's I think my story, my personal story is there in White Wahine. Yes. And, and then the two next bestsellers are there. I don't think the children's books are there anymore. But, just go to the publisher and she'll source you out.
Did the children's books come first for you, Kez? I can't remember the chronologic.
No, I wrote White Wahine. Wrote White Wahine, which took me nearly 3 years to write that book.
Yes.
because it was heart. To me, it was like pulling out my heart and giving it a squeeze and putting it back in.
Yeah,
you know, it was hard work. And and believe you me, most writers will know when they write personally, they lose family and friends very fast. So yeah, we don't want to do that on this show. We want to gain friends and family.
Do you want to gain friends and family? In writing your personal story, it has to, at the end of the day, be your story. And you can't govern how other people react to your story. You can only tell it as authentically as you can, because that's what's important, isn't it, Kez? The importance is around your story. So whether or not people react to it in a way that you want, you can't govern that, and you shouldn't try.
No.
Because it is such a, when you're writing about your own personal story, it is a very challenging, and Kez and I both know just how challenging it is to write personal stories. At the end of the day, we believe that that story is worth telling and is of value to people who read it. And the reason we go through that difficult process is because we absolutely believe that someone reading those words will be helped by what they read and not hindered.
That's right. So when you, the magic thing about writing is it doesn't have to be public.
Yes.
So even if you never contact me or contact yourself, Tony, I implore all people to put their words onto paper and keep them somewhere safe. So it doesn't have to be a public. People think, oh, I've written a book. It doesn't have to be published. It doesn't have to be publicly. You know, it has. What I implore people to do is keep it somewhere safe. Keep it as a journal somewhere. So when I went through my mother's stuff, there was nothing. My father's stuff, nothing, except memories of theirs. But yet my mother-in-law wrote a huge memoir book, huge, but it was for family only. She spelt my name wrong. I mean, I really got upset about the whole thing. She spelt my name. No. How can you get Kez wrong? But anyway, an amazing story of the St. George name, which was, belongs to royalty. And I never connected any of it until I went to Spain and saw the Spanish king was actually related to my husband way, way, way back. You know, it means it filled in the dots and crossed the T's where I was concerned. So leave your story behind, folks. Leave it behind.
Leave it as a legacy for your grandchildren. Leave it as a legacy of your great-grandchildren, because, you know, often I think about my grandparents in particular, and I would love to hear Granddad's voice. I would just love to hear Granddad's voice. We can do that now. We can leave our words. We can leave our voice. We can, and what a gift to give to our great-grandchildren that they can actually listen to their great-grandmother or great-grandfather. That's a really precious thing to do. And as Kez says, you don't have to be published. It doesn't have to be public. But we encourage you to leave that legacy for the people that follow us.
That's right.
And, my friends, that is our show for this week. I'm really sorry about our guest. I hope you've enjoyed our conversation with Kez today, who is a worldly, wonderful wealth of information. And we will be back next week. We do have a very exciting guest next week, and I know that he is really looking forward to the show. He's been widely promoting it across all of his networks, and Kez and I will be chatting next week to Franz Charles about his new book. Kez, thank you so much. It's wonderful to co-host a show with you, and we will be back next week, everyone. And that is our lot for this week. Thanks, Kez. Bye for now.
Thank you, Tony. Bye for now.